You're listening to the People's Podcast.
Where's Punk? Did you try the Pepsi machine?
On thingsdezsays.net.
Hey, Faraz, we might get sued for copyright infringement here when we play this song, but you know what? Jerry McDivitt can suck it, because it's the Warrior, damn it.
Damn it.
Damn it.
If there were ring ropes anywhere nearby.
Can you feel it, Des? Can you feel the energy? Can you feel it?
I can feel it coursing through my body and my veins.
Absolutely.
Shake them ring ropes and sit on back, because this is a very special edition of the People's Podcast where we're going to
try them out from our usual format.
Yeah. Yeah, and we're not going to look as heavily into the week that was, although I guess it kind of lends itself hand in hand.
It does.
But we're going to look at the legacy of not one of my, you know, not one of the best workers out there per se, but one of the most influential and to me personally, one of the best.
One of the most popular. I don't think people realize, because of the Hogan thing, how over and how popular the Ultimate Warrior gimmick was. He was meant to be what Hogan was in the 80s in the WWE. I don't think many people understand or realize this fact, and I think it's very important to highlight that. He was meant to take the WWE into the 90s.
Yeah. The Ultimate Warrior passed away on Tuesday from what they're calling natural causes at the age of 54. And it was really a blow to me, not just because we had just seen him get kind of mend his fences with the WWE, thanks once again to Triple H,
who's really
become like the miracle worker in a lot of ways, mending those relationships between wrestlers and Vince McMahon, who is the number one holder of grudges.
Well, yes.
So it was really surreal to see him on Raw doing the Warrior character, and then the next day realizing that that's the last time we're gonna see that character done.
And looking back on that promo, which I've done over and over again this week, it's a very eerie promo after we realize what happened the next day.
It's absolutely
very strange.
I really don't want to connect any dots between the promo and that.
I don't think there is, to be fair. I don't genuinely think there is, but
it's
one of those
thing.
Intangible moments.
Yeah, it was one of those, man. But just the fact that it happened, it really hit me just how much I loved the Warrior as a kid. And even I wasn't watching wrestling at the time of his peak. I went back and relived wrestling through my cousin's
VHS tapes.
Yeah, old VHS collection. When I was like 10 years old, and I kind of relived all that stuff through those tapes, and the Warrior was foremost among those. And I remember as a kid, I was a shy kid. I was a nerd, and I didn't, you know, really talk to too many people. And so the Warrior was like this very charismatic guy who everybody loved because he was so full of energy and people didn't bully him or anything. So that he was somebody that I automatically gravitated toward a lot more than Hulk Hogan, to be fair.
And I think that's it. The Warrior was like the guy that you could talk about and gravitate to, not because he was a superhero, because he was kind of like us. He had that fighting spirit, the working man type thing. Does that make any sense?
He was the guy that would be up for anything, you know? And I think the fact that somebody hit it on the head on Twitter on Tuesday night when they said that the Ultimate Warrior is a real life superhero, and we expect our superheroes to live forever. And when they die, we as people are at our most vulnerable.
And that's how we kind of felt when the streak ended, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
It's a different type of thing, but that's how it felt when the streak ended.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm working right now on the blog, and it might be up by the time you listen to this, but I was working on it on Friday And I couldn't bring myself to start writing about Warrior, but I almost did draw that parallel between Warrior and the Streak.
That's what it's been a very strange week in that sense.
It's been a very up and down week this week. But we wanted to take time out from, again, the normal stuff we do and talk about this because he's such a huge part of WWE lore. And I'm very happy that they've finally started to acknowledge his character again, because for a long time, they didn't really talk about him.
And when they did, they didn't talk about him in very positive, glowing lights.
No, they didn't. But if you go back,
that's another thing in saying that, because Triple H broke the news to the people on SmackDown because Vince was actually pretty shaken up about it, apparently. Wow. This is the word.
If you go back and look at Warrior's history, it's a very interesting time, both from a storyline perspective and some of the things he's done that we'll talk about, and also a lot of the, if you're a fan of like the insider behind the scenes stuff, there's always something happening with Ultimate Warrior
yes.
and his compatriots. So I wanted to go back and kind of look at that stuff. But I know Ferez, he kind of got his start doing the tag team. Well, he's a bodybuilder at first.
He's a bodybuilder at first. So, and that's how a lot of those old school wrestlers started. So, you know, and you had him.
One of his bodybuilding compatriots, a fellow by the name of
legendary Steve
Borden. Yeah. Guy who
Flash Borden.
Flash. Warrior would come to be known as Rock. Isn't
ironically,
that weird?
Weird. So yeah, they had their star, and you did kind of see a little bit of them on the Mid-South DVD, if anybody's seen that.
They were there. Oh, that's right. They worked as the Blade Runners on that show, didn't they?
Yeah. Yeah. So you know, there is footage out there of them teaming. It was a very short-lived thing because they were both young and Sting wasn't the Sting that we know now.
And they didn't like each other.
But, Sting did post about it on Facebook and put a picture out there. So I'm sure it sounds like Warrior buried a lot of hatchets over the last few weeks. I've seen people like Kevin Nash tweet and Scott Hall and all them.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's how they got started. Yeah. They were managed by Mr. Zeb Coulter, otherwise known as Dutch Mantel.
Dutch Mantel, yeah. Did they work in Memphis?
Yes, you know? Jerry Jarrett's promotion.
Okay. Yeah. All right, cool. So they worked there. They were Mid-South. They worked World Class under different names.
Well, that's where the Dingo Warrior thing happened.
Oh,
in World Class.
Right. Yeah, which he joked about at the Hall of Fame. Which
it did.
Really funny.
The Dingo Warrior. That's where that all started. You know, he had a tag team with one of the Von Erichs.
Oh, did he really? Which one? Do you know?
Not off the top of my head. I can't remember off the top of my head.
I imagine like...
It was the one called 80s. The Warrior. There was one called the Warrior, something Warrior Von Erich, so I can't remember which one it was off the top of my head.
It was the late 80s, so I imagine like Kerry was very hot at that time.
Yes. And he did win the WCWA Heavyweight Championship. So, he did win that title. Internal politics back then. So, you know, he kind of left and then came back again.
And then he came into WWF as the Dingo Warrior.
The Dingo Warrior, but Vince didn't like it.
Can you imagine how much the perception of Ultimate Warrior would have been shattered if he came into, he made his debut on WWF television as the Dingo Warrior? His fans remember that shit.
Yeah,
we don't forget that, man.
You know, yeah, exactly. I mean, look at people like, I don't know, the One Man Gang who came in later as was Akeem. You don't forget that. People forget he's the One Man Gang.
Or guys like Tensai, who've been gone for years. He comes back and people still know him as Albert. You know, we don't forget that stuff.
We don't. So, we have long memories of that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, man. And so he came in as Dingo Warrior, but he debuted as Ultimate Warrior.
Luckily, though, all them were on house shows. Before they put him on TV, they changed his name.
Yeah, this was on like, what was their Primetime Wrestling? I think was
Primetime.
Pretty much their only TV at that point.
Well, they had Saturday Night's main event, and Superstars.
And Tuesday Night Titans.
Tuesday Night Titans. Oh Jesus!
What a show that was.
I know, right? But I think his real big break, because all he did was squash matches, and he kind of had a few interesting feuds in the, you know, in the 80, coming up to 1988. But I think the thing, and he was over. Like, the fans gravitated to him. The gimmick was over.
Well, yeah, if you do that, and then you also squash people for a long time, it's like people associate you with winning. That's why Ryback was such a big deal for a long time.
Exactly. And he wasn't just squashing anybody. He was, like, having matches as Andre the Giant and things like that. These weren't just any people, anybody's.
The irony here is the first time he was pinned was by somebody with whom he would go on to have a pretty big Intercontinental title feud with. Yeah, and that was Rick Rude.
Another one who's no longer, it's scary. How many people are not here?
You put together this list of stuff that the Warrior did for us, and looking at the list,
we'll get to WrestleMania 7, but all I'm going to say is all the people from that match in WrestleMania 7 are no longer with us.
Yeah, which is really unfortunate.
It is. But in 1988...
Yeah, go ahead.
In 1988, at the inaugural SummerSlam event, the Warrior did something really cool. I thought it was cool. It's one of those moments where you don't forget it, because he beat the Honky Tonk Man, who was reigning Intercontinental Champion for the rest of forever.
Yeah.
He pinned him in 27 seconds.
That's one of those things that, you know, because that record still stands, right? Honky Tonk Man is the longest reigning champion.
I think Santino, no, I'm kidding. Yeah, it does. Yeah, it still stands.
He wanted to.
He did want to.
He wanted to break that streak. Yeah, but Honky Tonk Man, longest reigning Intercontinental champion. And it was one of those things where it was supposed to be a comedy reign, and it seems to me like they just kind of forgot to change the title. It was one of those fluke reigns.
This is before it was the work. I mean, you had people like Steamboat hold it in 87, but once Honky Tonk Man won it, I think they just forgot. Yeah, right. Because there was so much focus on the Hogan Andre thing. And the Macho King and all that, you know, the Macho Man was coming into his own. They all forgot about the Intercontinental title until the Warrior.
Warrior winning it. Yeah, Warrior winning it, I think, was their idea of how to rehabilitate it. And they really tried with Warrior and eventually getting screwed, right, by Rick Rude. Losing the title to him.
And that was a really, really good feud. I think people underestimate just how good Rick Rude was. Obviously he hasn't been around for so many years, but he was very talented.
Yeah. Again, that's a hard one, man, because I'm watching 98 WCW, and he's...
he was injured. He couldn't do anything, but he's there.
Yeah, so he's just a mouthpiece, and it's like he's... Even as a mouthpiece, he's excellent, man. As an injured mouthpiece.
And that gimmick of Rick Rude was over at that time. You know, the whole big guy posing and all that stuff. So, and I think we all know what happens after the Rick Rude feud.
Wait. Wasn't the Rick feud where they had the legendary pose down?
Yes, at the Royal Rumble.
Yeah. That's all I can say to that is I could just laugh. Because it was it's silly, but it's a huge deal. Like, people went crazy for it.
Well, this is back in those days where Vince McMahon loves those. Well, you show me that video of when he does the bodybuilding thing. He loves that kind of stuff.
He loves the body, guys. Yeah, man. It was surreal.
Do you know the last time we had a pose down? Can you remember the last time we had a pose down in the WWE?
No, I want to say that was the last time. I hope I'm...
It wasn't.
Right?
Triple H and Scott Steiner had one.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yes. When they tried to make Scott Steiner look like a big deal.
Yeah.
Then he nearly killed Triple H, and that was the end of that.
Scott Steiner was dead to me after he joined the NWO. Bastard. I will never forget
how he made Tony Schiavone cry.
Oh, no. That was Dusty Rhodes, man.
That was Dusty Rhodes.
Yeah. What was the February WCW pay-per-view? I forgot already.
Sold out. Was it sold out? No, the one on Uncensored.
No.
Whatever, I don't care, Des.
Oh, well, it doesn't matter. That show broke my heart.
Because that was the end of the legendary Steiner Brothers.
Yeah. Super Brawl.
There you go.
Yeah. Screw you, Scott Steiner, you incoherent bastard. But anyway.
It's going to get worse for you.
Talking about
don't
the Warrior stuff with Rick Rude. And he lost the title to Rude. He won it back. And that
he
was
won
the
it
beginning.
Back.
Yeah.
And
that
then
was
he had
the
like a little
of,
feud with Heenan.
Yeah, that was weird. But this was, I think, I thought that was a very good holdover feud that at the same time had a lot of heat because it's Bobby Heenan.
I tell you what, if there's a man who can generate heat better than any, I don't care. There has never been a better heel, in my opinion, than Bobby the Brain Heenan.
Yeah, and I'm not even talking about his wrestling days.
Between him and Vince, you can't say who's the better heel. In different times, obviously, but Heenan in the late 80s and 90s was hated. No one liked him.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. And it did get to the point where, like, he was so good as a heel that you couldn't help but like him. But
yes.
We weren't at that point yet.
No.
So it was just
And somehow
bastard.
He beat Warrior by doing a sleeper hold.
Yes.
Like, when was the last time you won a sleeper hold win a match?
Which I think even in 1989 was a little dated.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I think that was just a holdover for what was supposed to be one of the most dominant intercontinental title reigns we've ever seen, which led into other things, right?
Yeah, he's one of two men who's held the world title and the intercontinental title at the same time. So let's talk about this. I don't think people realize, again, just how big of a deal this is. This is Hulk Hogan. The man who revolutionized the world of professional wrestling. I say that grudgingly. Against the Ultimate Warrior. The most... I want to say the most over guy in the company. Because there's Hogan and then there's Warrior. There's two sides. There's two kind of different fan bases there.
People knew Hogan. You know, Hogan had been on top since 1984, on and off.
And people did want to change at this point. We were getting to that point.
Was this the before or after? This had to have before, right? Because this was in 1990. When Warrior had his stuff with Andre the Giant.
Yeah, this was after.
And I think. Okay, right after. So I think that was really what made him. That helped cement him as, like, a believable star.
Just to tell the story, during house shows, what they do is have Warrior squash people, and one of the people he squashed was Andre the Giant, which is hard to say because he's Andre the Giant.
Yeah, and again, this is, like, 1989. In 1987, the dude could barely move, if you remember watching WrestleMania 3. So, squashing this guy, I mean, it's different than squashing like a 1970s Andre the Giant, but it was still very impressive
in
terms of WWE lore.
And also, I think you got to realize that Andre the Giant towards the latter end of his career wasn't an easy man to work with. If he didn't want to do something, he won't do it.
Yeah.
Case in point, WrestleMania 3, Hogan was so scared that he wouldn't let him lift him.
That would have been hilarious.
Having that rub from Andre is a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah. So that kind of, to put in perspective, that kind of put the wheels in motion for what was going to be Warrior and Hogan at the Sky Dome.
Not the Silver Dome.
Or the Super Dome or the Astro Dome.
No, none of the other domes. The Sky Dome.
Lots of domes in WrestleMania lore, if
you
look at it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, this was it, man. This was the big match, IC title versus,
World a young title, Edge was sitting in the audience.
He was, and this was their opportunity to go from Hogan to who they felt would
was
be
the
star of the 90s.
Yes, and I watched this match yesterday. It wasn't a very good match, as most Warrior. Hogan matches were.
You watch Warrior Hogan matches, and I think that even now that they're on good terms with Warrior, they would happily tell you Ultimate Warrior was all about his entrances.
Yes.
His promos weren't very good, although they were.
Well, I think he got away with it with the promo because he was that kind of gimmick. It kind of worked. Because he was doing the whole intensity thing.
The matches weren't very good, but just as a complete character, like, the guy
had it all.
He made money.
And what Vince wanted to do was to transition into someone younger, because Hogan wasn't going to be around forever. And like I said, I think the fans were getting sick of the whole babyface Hogan thing and the whole take your vitamins and say. I'm not saying Hulkamania was quite dead, but, you know, it was not as popular as it once was. And this crowd was split 50-50. It wasn't a pro-Hogan crowd, as the WWE would have you believe, in the slightest.
Right. It was people wanted to see this new guy upset the norm that was in WWE at the time. Because people, I think one thing that people don't really expect from wrestling fans, but it's true, man. Wrestling fans always want change. They want to see new things happen. So when you have a guy like Hulk Hogan, who's been on top for like 6 years, and then you got this new guy who you think can conceivably actually knock him off his throne.
Yeah.
A lot of people are clamoring for it to happen.
And it did happen. And Hulk Hogan, the Ultimate Warrior, became the WWE F champion.
Yeah.
He had to give up the Intercontinental title, because back in those days you couldn't hold both titles and you're not Triple H. So
that's right.
Was
he the only who was the other person to
Trips
hold both?
Triple H.
When did he do that?
2002, 2003.
Good for him, man.
This was during the Evolution days when they, I think that, you know, do you remember the time when they actually tried to, when they like unified the world title in the Continental? So it kind of did that.
What a rebound, by the way, from Triple H. Doing what Warrior did, replicating what Warrior did after basically being destroyed by him later in his career.
Exactly. Exactly. But we'll get to that. It's the match that I don't think people, many, many people will remember. But yeah, we'll get to that in a bit.
Especially him.
Especially, well, he had a hog. I don't know what he wants to remember less, that or the hog pen match.
Oh, man. I think they're both pretty scarring.
And this is before the Shawn thing even happened. So him losing to Warrior like that must have been like a boo.
Yeah.
This is before the MSG incident, so.
He was just a dude. He was just a guy who was coming in from WCW, and they're like, well, you know. Let's just
and the only
this
reason
guy.
He got a spot and was going to win the King of the Ring because he was in the clique. It's a fact.
Yeah.
But all right, again, so, we'll get to that.
Going back after Mania 7.
Not much happened in 1990, to be fair. He had a good steel cage match with Rick Rude again. At SummerSlam.
He's just a champion. He's just a dominant champion at this point.
He's just a dominant champion. He's still over. But then, in 1991, one of the biggest storylines in professional wrestling kind of merged. There were two big storylines. I think the ones that wrestling fans really, really cared about was the one that came out of this Sergeant Slaughter Warrior match. So let's break it down. What happens at the Royal Rumble is, we all know the whole Sergeant Slaughter story, right? With him being an Iraqi sympathizer, which is a very dangerous move by the WWE.
Yes, yes. I like the stories that they had to like have 24-hour security around his family.
Yeah. I'm not sure how much of that is true, but back in those days, I wouldn't be surprised. It's a big deal. So what they had to do was have Warrior drop the title to Sergeant Slaughter. Now, the way they did it was really clever, because at that time, the Macho Man, Macho King, was being managed by Sensational Sherry. Two people who are no longer with us anymore. And what they had was, the Macho Man wanted the title shot, and the Warrior wouldn't give it to him, so he basically hit him in the head with a scepter and cost him the title, which led to this career-ending match for one of them. You know, whoever lost had to retire.
Right.
At WrestleMania 7.
My thing is, because you're looking at that, and why did they have him drop the title? Did they just not have confidence in Warrior to going main eventing as champion, so they went back to the obvious, which was Hogan?
I don't think so. I always wondered
why they didn't run with it.
I think, and this is, remember we watched that story of WrestleMania thing?
Yeah.
Where Vince said, Slaughter, the only way this thing would work is if they did that match with Hogan. You know, the Great American Hero versus the Traitor, whatever it was. I think that's what the feeling was.
And I guess he had to put the title back on Hogan in the end and kind of go back to what the WWE was familiar with, which was Hogan on top. But I think that in the end, although it wasn't necessarily a vote of confidence for Warrior, what he ended up doing with Randy Savage, I think,
was an amazing. I love this match. It's not as, it's better than I think that the match they had later on in SummerSlam. It's an amazing match because the story that they told and the psychology they had to use in this match was amazing because you had the added mystery of Elizabeth there.
Right, because they'd done the storyline where they were breaking them up, right?
Yeah, well, they had broken up. And that's why Sherry was the manager. So with Savage losing, that's the way they could get them back together again with, you know, and turning Savage face again. It was a really, really good story. It was a very good match.
They had been long broken up, though, right? In real life,
Yeah,
okay. So that was them, and they were putting them back together, and then that was leading into the SummerSlam that everybody knows with the wedding and stuff.
Yep.
So I like, by the way, just as a side note, where Warrior beats Savage and retires him, and then you have Savage on color commentary. Still, by the way, one of my favorite color commentators of all time because he accentuates everything.
He's very difficult to work with, according to JR, though.
Oh, man. But everything he says, he follows with a, yeah. Awesome. My favorite.
His relationship with Heenan was also brilliant. I don't know how much have you heard of him, Heenan, and whoever at the same announce booth. Oh, it's brilliant. It's amazing.
I like having him, Heenan, and JR. Because JR is so impartial, trying not to get involved.
And then you have those two arguing. It's brilliant.
Yeah. And then they eventually tease like the retirement with Randy Savage, and then him like begging Jack Tunney to reinstate him to fight Jake. And it was great, man. It was great stuff.
That whole storyline was good. But then again, the thing with Warrior's career, it stopped and it started. Does that make any sense? It was a very stop-start career.
Yeah,
momentum.
This
then
is what
he didn't.
We're talking
he did,
about
then
in
he
terms
didn't.
Of. This is what we mean in terms of the insider stuff, because there are a lot of things here that Warrior always kind of stopped his own momentum in a way because he wanted to renegotiate things with Vince. And because
Because
he was so well positioned on the card, he had that bargaining power.
And he.
So we got some very interesting
points. He wanted more money than Hogan. It's like.
Yeah, and maybe in 1991, maybe it was well deserved. Maybe it wasn't. But he realized where he was in terms of what he meant to the company in 1991 and later on as well.
Yeah.
He understood what he meant to the company and what he could and couldn't ask for. He was. People didn't like him, but I think he was a very shrewd businessman.
He was, and that's where a lot of the people negotiating, I think that's where a lot of people learned how to do it. People like Brett and them was with the Warrior.
Yeah. Yeah.
And sometimes he did hold Vince out to ransom sometimes.
And because I think back then you could also bargain a little better because there were so many places where you could go, even in the 90s, you could jump.
Oh, you had SM, you know, Smoky Mountain, you had WCW.
Yeah, all these places. Today, all these guys get ripped on by the veterans for not being able to speak up for themselves. But really, it's like, where are you going to go? You know,
you're going to go to Nashville?
Dixie? Yeah, it's silly. Are you going to go to Jeff Jarrett's new thing that you don't even know
if it's going to work?
Be?
Are you going to go to Ring of Honor?
I think Warrior was in a prime place. I'm very interested to know how Warrior would would have adopted himself if he had started like in 2000 or even later.
That would have been interesting.
There would be a lot less. There would have been a lot less leverage there for him.
Yeah, because there were so many.
If
he was around during, say, the Attitude Era, it's from 98 to 2002, when even the mid-card talent was good enough sometimes to be main event. Yeah, people like Jericho on the mid-card. It would have been interesting to see if he could have positioned himself the way he did and negotiated the way he did. Because Vince could have been like, okay, whatever. If you don't want, if you're not going to take what I'm giving you, bye.
Exactly. Have fun in New Japan.
Yeah. See, you can be at the dying days of WCW.
All right. So then while the Elizabeth stuff is happening with Macho Man,
The Undertaker has been a mean human being. He's mean.
Yes. He's doing terrible things.
Terrible things to people and burying them in caskets and whatnot. You know.
Where was Survivor Series where Undertaker beat Hogan for the title? Is that 91?
Yep.
All right. So that was a year after he debited.
Right.
And so to build him, with Taker at this point?
You have to align him with somebody. And obviously, you've got Paul Bearer, but you've got to align him with a top star. Who has the same...
And,
go on.
It can't just be any old heel turn for us. It can't just be any old... You have to build to the heel turn.
Quite. It can't just be any old person. So, it has to be a very dark person.
Yes. And so how did they do this? Because they built up a trust between the warrior and this
the snake
dark,
man.
Slithery human being.
This viper.
Another Hall of Famer from this weekend.
Yeah. So they built up this trust, and what they did was they had him doing all kinds of tests and challenges. Like, they had him buried alive and someone digging graves and things like that. And then the final challenge is you have to walk into a... What?
My favorite one was they put him in a... The first one, right? Because Undertaker put him in a casket.
Yeah.
And then Warrior came out, but it was like the idea was that he was dead. The Undertaker had actually murdered the Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah.
And then they brought him back with CPR. And I'm just like, this is definitely WWE in the 90s.
They would never do that today.
That's it. It's just so silly.
They brought him back with CPR.
The cloth was even ripped inside the casket because the warrior had like tried to claw his way out. Like, it was just ridiculous. He had to do these three tests for Jake Roberts. And the last one was
him getting bitten by one.
He had to open a box
with a Lucifer
bitten in the face.
Indeed, in the face. And, you know, the poison and all that stuff was. You know, and then randomly in walks the Undertaker, as you do.
Yeah. He was just waiting around and he
happened to be stopping by. They had the body bag match, by the way. It was awful.
So that was the big heel turn for Jake Roberts. And that's what set up the stuff with Elizabeth later, because what basically happened was Warrior spun off to do his own thing with The Undertaker, and yeah, you're right, they had the body bag match.
It was terrible. It was a really bad match. It's awful.
I haven't watched it ever.
It's on... It's on The Undertaker...
I probably won't watch it
Scariest
ever.
Matches DVD or whatever it's called.
Oh, God.
Most deadliest matches.
Yeah, I'm going to stay away. I'm going to stay away from that one.
If you want to remember The Undertaker positively, I would, too.
You could just stay from everything
pre WrestleMania 14. Yeah.
Yeah, and you'll be fine. he's doing that with Undertaker. And then they wanted to build to a Jake Roberts feud, didn't they? And that's when
never happened because he was kind of having contract negotiations and things of that nature. And it just didn't materialize because he left in that summer of 1991 for a bit.
Yes. He came back one more time, right? Before in 92?
Yeah, he did come back in 92. That's when he won the he had that match with Savage at SummerSlam.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's duh. So they did that, and then they wanted to do the tag name was going to be like
the Macho Maniac, was it something?
Ultimate Maniacs, yeah.
Ultimate Maniacs. Yeah,
I really wish that would have been great.
No, it wouldn't have.
They were the the rated RKO of the 90s. Awesome.
You couldn't think of any other tag team?
Nope. Well, I know you hate that one the most.
You couldn't say so. Rated RKO. I kind of half hate
rated
it.
Rated RKO. Yeah, that would have been great, though. But we didn't have that because, again, more stuff.
Warrior decided to.
Warrior and the...
negotiating and, yeah.
And this was
the one he referenced at the Hall of Fame.
Well, yeah. And have you heard the theory, the conspiracies that he was fired because some, I think it was like some Canadian reporter had convinced McMahon to fire him because of the steroids
allegation. Yes. Considering you had Hulk Hogan on your payroll, but then again, Hulk Hogan wasn't around much either then.
Yeah. And he had just testified in 92, right?
Who?
Hogan?
Hogan did, yeah, against Vince.
Or was this later?
That was 93, yeah, okay. 94.
So he testified a little later against him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was interesting times in the WWE because, you know, but they were all right because they had people like Brett and they had people like Shawn coming up at the time. They had, you know, the Bulldog. So... The Warrior wasn't needed as much as he would have been, say, 1990 or 1991. Because he had these new guys coming in. But that doesn't take away from the fact that he had some of the most amazing matches.
Absolutely. So then you have Warrior done with WWE for a while, and he's just kind of...
Semi-retired, I guess you'd call it.
For a bit.
Mm.
Is that what they called it?
A semi-retirement, yeah. Because he didn't join any other company. He could have, you know, he didn't go to Atlanta or anything. He didn't go to WCW.
No, he didn't go to
Philly.
Not yet.
Well, quite.
So, yeah, he was done for a while.
He was. Des will get to that in Throwback Vibes in a later date.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Why would he come back in 96 then? What was the initiation for that?
I don't know. I guess there really wasn't one. I don't see why they would have needed him. I guess for star power, I guess. Because obviously 96 is around the time that all that stuff was happening down in the other company.
Sure. Okay, so in 96, let's put it in perspective. You had, let's put it in perspective, though. You had Shawn on top still, right?
Shawn was about to be
top guy in 96?
Yep. Shawn, the show that Shawn won the title. That was the Iron Man match show.
So who were your top guys in 96 then? Brett,
Shawn.
Shawn.
Taker, obviously.
Was he considered
Diesel
a top guy at that point?
Scott Hall and Nash were about to leave.
Okay. So yeah, I'm guessing you just needed to bring Warrior in to replace the guys that were leaving.
Leaving. So, you know, they brought him back. Thinking. And apparently he had some more creative control at this point, too, but... Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know.
Have you ever watched his return?
What, the Triple H match?
Yeah.
I've seen it. It's the match that I think... There are two matches in his career that I think Triple H would like to forget.
Yeah, and it's this one and the Godwin match.
This one and the Godwin match. Because Triple H
My question, though... It was 4 years... removed since Warrior was in WWE and he came back in 96. How did fans... I got to go back and watch it because I've never seen this match.
His reaction was huge.
Okay. So they don't forget, man. Like I'm saying, the wrestling fans don't forget things.
We don't forget things. I mean, you heard the... Was it Jericho was away for how long? 3 years? When he came back in 2008?
Yeah, and then they were just as excited to see the guy.
Yeah, when it's someone like who has that charisma and who kind of has that relationship with the fans, it's very, very hard to make them forget. I mean, look at Sean when he came back in 2002.
Yeah. Although Sean was really never off. He was never really off for a long period of time. He was always
there.
Still,
well, he was kind of there, but there wasn't. Yeah.
Yeah, he was still around. People still knew who he was. By the way, have you ever gone to see this self-destruction DVD?
I saw it back in the day. A friend had it. I've seen it. It's
okay. I've never seen it. I might, you know.
This is around the time where the WWE found it in their wisdom to kind of make these random DVDs. Like, they did one on Jake the Snake, too. The Pick Your Poison DVD.
And just burn bridges. Yeah, they were just burning.
This is around the time where I don't know what's going through Vince's head. Where he'd just make these DVDs for no good reason whatsoever.
Yeah.
I'm surprised he didn't want to make one on Hogan, but I guess he couldn't really.
Well, in like 2005, they were still working it. Well.
Well.
Yeah, they were still working together in 2005.
Yeah. And remember, he tried to do it with Brett too, but that didn't work because, you know, it's Brett. The fans wouldn't let him.
Yeah. Although they did do it, though. They did a very pro-WWE Bret Hart DVD.
They did. They did do it. They did do that. I'm not going to.
Then they went back and they re. They all of a sudden they were best friends in 2010.
Yep.
But anyway, the reason I referenced the self-destruction DVD is because I believe Triple H talks about
Warrior being a jerk
and how hard it was.
Yeah. And
yeah, everyone.
It's Triple H. Come on now.
Yeah, you have that creative control. I think it's going to be hard to not, especially a young guy like Triple H who
exactly this isn't Triple H that we know now. This is Triple H recently signed his first WrestleMania.
Dude, go back and watch 1996 Triple H. It is surreal to see that guy is now the COO of World Wrestling Entertainment.
The guy who's built a performance center.
Yeah, it's nuts, dude.
And look at this. Like, I mean, look at this, some of the guys he had. Like we always reference the Hogpen match, but he had matches with people like, yeah, the Godwins and Gold Dust.
it's
very odd, very strange. Mark Mero.
Speaking of Goldust, speaking of Goldust, he's like the only other person that Warrior really wrestled at this time before.
Yeah, there was
again.
Goldust was Intercontinental Champion, and they were having that thing.
Yeah, and again, they packed it in.
He did. Well, Linda referenced it. Sometimes Warrior could be a little bit impetuous. Just a tad.
Yeah.
So, you know.
He would rave over the phone.
And Linda could get on with, like, paperwork. Imagine Linda just sitting there with her phone. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I wish Muzak could just, like, replace their annoying music with clips of the Ultimate Warrior raving about things.
That'd be awesome, right? In the Warrior voice. Cool.
Yeah, just raving about how much it sucks to be on hold.
Yes. That's something someone should make.
So,
Triple H, get on that. Release it on the app.
So he's out. He's out for a long time. Another 2 years, right? Before he ends up in Atlanta.
In Atlanta, yes. And I don't want to talk about this because I don't want to ruin it for Dez. It was awful.
Well, I mean, I know some of the stuff that
it was terrible.
Know, I'm not looking.
He nearly crippled
to watching it.
Bulldog. He wanted
wasn't
a trapdoor
also,
in the ring.
Yeah, you're a trapdoor. Wasn't there also like a thing where he debuted and he was supposed to cut like a 6-minute promo and he like talked for 18 minutes or something ridiculous?
Yes.
Like, oh my god.
The I'm One Warrior these, Nation.
Yeah, I'm dreading this WCW progression that I'm going through.
Oh, it's coming. It's coming pretty soon.
I'm very afraid. I just saw. We'll talk about this more next week on Throwback Fest, but I just saw Sting come out of a helicopter.
It's very scary.
I'm not gonna lie.
It's scary,
kinda
isn't
awesome.
It's awesome, but scary. What?
I kind of marked out a little bit. Just a little bit.
I can understand why.
As
I mean, it's a moment, but it's like, wait, this is Sting, your world champion. This is your. Hang on, what are you doing?
He was totally fine.
He was. It's still scary.
Tony Schiavone.
He did have one more match after this run in WCW, by the way, huh?
Oh yeah, the epic contest with
yes.
Trivia fact, everybody.
Who was Warrior's last match
Orlando
against?
Orlando Jordan. Orlando Jordan.
And it wasn't like in America. It wasn't in Japan. No. It was in the great wrestling hotbed of Barcelona, Spain.
Was that their only show ever?
I hope so.
New Wrestling Evolution or whatever.
New Wrestling
whatever
Evolution.
I remember at the time not really being into like the very insider wrestling, but I would see headlines of Ultimate Warrior Wrestling in Spain and I would just go, what?
No, Dez, you see that now and you still go, what?
just that flight.
It's not like it was in Germany or the UK. In Spain. How many wrestling shows have you known to come out of Spain?
Just, well, one, for sure.
Well, that one, obviously.
Oh, man. So there you go. That's some crazy trivia fact for you.
Yeah, if you ever want a quiz question, that's the one. No one will know. I'm telling you. Your ardent wrestling fan won't know that.
Again, I'm going to miss talking about this guy and all the crazy stuff he does. I loved his crazy YouTube things that he would do.
His blog was an interesting read sometimes.
He would occasionally yell at me. Yeah, he would just yell at you to, like, do good things in life.
Yeah.
It was great.
And there was also, you know, one thing that did irritate me this week? I don't know if you saw this. I linked you to it. I don't know if you read it or saw it.
The Nancy Grace thing?
Yeah. There are some idiot journalists out there.
It really bothers me that she's out there and insinuating things like, first of all, she's grilling DDP, who's like the nicest man
in the history of life.
And she's treating him like he's Vince McMahon, number one. It's like he has no control over who's doing drugs and who isn't.
Secondly,
or who wasn't.
If she did her research, she'd know that there is a wellness program, at least in the WWE. That they're trying to implement and trying to keep these guys safe.
At least kudos to DDP for at least trying to bring that home. But I think a lot of people, what they took issue with most of all is the fact that she had a list scrolling on the screen.
Yes.
And one of the people that she insinuated died from drugs was
Owen Hart.
And people were absolutely rubbed raw about that. And I totally understand that.
There were others like Chris Candido, who died in hospital. Nothing to do with drugs. He died after an operation.
And this is one of those things that makes journalism seem like we're going right back to the early 1900s in the era of sensationalism and people just saying things for the sake of saying things. And I know it's CNN, and I know I shouldn't take it seriously anyway. But it really bothered me.
It bothered a lot of people. The whole wrestling world kind of exploded into life on Thursday after they read that. It was ridiculous. I've seen some sensationalist journalism to do with wrestling, but that was something else.
That said, getting a cancel Nancy Grace hashtag out there, they're not gonna cancel Nancy Grace because of a wrestler.
No.
I'm just saying.
But the hashtag is out there.
You know. It's out there. If you want to help out.
I'm surprised no one tweeted Triple H to
displeasure. Because the last time somebody tried to cancel a show, the host of that show is now going to be hosting the Late Show next year. So I'm just saying, be careful.
Jerry Lawler
before
did
you
it
start
better.
Asking a network to cancel a show.
Yes. As Dez pointed out, next time someone slaps someone on his show, Jerry Lawler did it better.
All right, so we're going to end things off here. Again, I love talking about Warrior. If you have any Warrior thoughts, please feel free to share them at Des Delgadillo, at The Wisp, and at MonkeyPusher69 on Twitter, or our Facebook page, facebook.com/thingsdesses. And if
we will be back to normal next week, because we'll reference this week's Raw next week, because it's one of those Raw you have to reference.
Yeah, we'll talk about more things next week, and it'll be fine. But I just really wanted.
I think
Amphraz
it's one of those shows. Yeah, it's one of those things where we've had deaths from wrestling before, but this is one of those generational things where all three of us.
Yeah.
We lived through this era.
For us, like. I can honestly tell you, like, I've experienced a lot of wrestling deaths in the last little while. But
we all have.
I don't want to, like, pick favorites. But I can't think of one that's affected me this much.
And I think it kind of hit home more because we saw him that recently.
And also because, again, he was just so instrumental to my childhood. And I don't know how instrumental he was to yours. But I in a lot of ways, I live vicariously through him.
Well, there are three people instrumental in my wrestling my wrestling upbringing, and Shawn isn't one of them, ironically, because I didn't get the whole Shawn Michaels thing till a little bit later. But there was him, Sting, and The Undertaker. Those three guys kind of made me into a wrestling fan. Those three gimmicks and characters. You had the ultimate good guy in Sting. You had the really intense good guy in The Undertaker. And then you had the scary Undertaker.
Scary man.
Scary.
And then he became a biker.
Yeah, well, indeed. Indeed. That was later on in life. But we made this link at the beginning of the show, but the streak ending and the Warrior's death kind of... It made this link... Between me and Des, we've barely tweeted this week. We've been...
It made it a really hard week just to be a wrestling fan.
WWE tried because Raw was excellent. It was a great Raw.
Yeah, it was very good. That's the thing. Like, you had WrestleMania, which was super good. You had the streak breaking, which hurt. And then you had Raw, which was really good. And then things got, unfortunately, very real.
On the Tuesday night.
Stuff. So it's just been a really, really tough week. And I'm glad that if you're listening, you've been able to experience the roller coaster with us. And we'll be back next week with hopefully a much more normal week.
Yeah.
And by the way, I just had to put this out there, but huge shout out to Dave Meltzer, dude, because that guy...
He's been all over the place. Week,
that guy... And the Observer has everything that's happened this week. It's like, this dude does not sleep.
And this is after the busiest week in the history of life, the week before. WrestleMania week is hectic. I don't think people understand just how hectic it is.
It's hectic, and then he has to go out and he has to write an Ultimate Warrior obituary. And he does it.
And isn't there like he does all his MMA spiel.
Yeah, the other sport. So this guy, I mean, I hope the Friday after the issue came out, I hope he just got to sleep. I really do. But go check out The Observer if you don't read it, because it covers things much more comprehensively than we do, that's for sure.
Yeah. We try and give you,
if you read online,
if we give you a basic overview, they go in depth.
Yeah, if you read online, it's only like $10 a month, so it can't hurt. So anyway, we're done. iTunes, find us, thingsdesays.net, Des Delgadillo, Faraz, The Iron Monster. Just search our names and you'll find a podcast, subscribe, and you'll get all the shows sent straight to your computer. And leave us a review. Tell us that we're cool and stuff. And if you don't, then Faraz got two words for you.
Piss off.